All right. Hey, good morning. Welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. What's the day? June 2nd, 2024. Beautiful day here on the East Coast. Hope it's awesome wherever you are at. It is Sunday. Thought I'd come upstairs here and see if I can chat a bit. Yeah, I don't have a lot going on. I'm actually going paddling today. We're pretty much into summer. Kids, I think, have a couple more weeks of school, but the summer vibe is out there, and paddling is on the menu. So I will be paddling today. I don't know how far. Paddled the other day. Not sure when the last podcast I did, but went paddling the other day. It was awesome. Found some humility. I shared, you know, the little beat down I got on my paddling skills, and, you know, it was up to me how I wanted to handle it. I appreciate you letting me share. Because my initial thoughts always aren't that great. And I tend to share a few of those here on this podcast. And, you know, once I share that kind of stuff and able to hear it, I can make a few different choices. One being, you know, let's take any advice for what it is and make the most of it. And so that's what I'm trying to do. Paddled with a different paddle with my coach on the... so we must have paddled... I paddled Friday. Today's Sunday, so... used a different paddle, tried to watch my stroke. It was good. It felt really good. I actually ordered a paddle, so I had to be getting that in a few weeks. And just try to, you know, listen and just be better. And so going paddling today, excited about that. It's not a lot to complain about. I had a really great week. Every day I get out of, here's another thing that was interesting. I talked to a guy that I paddle with, actually an accountant, and he was telling me that, you know, my big beef that I had with, when I left the salon was I felt like they sort of were, cheating me, and I felt like they were up to no good, and sort of talked about it. I talked to an accountant the other day, and he was telling me that, you know, the leaser, I would be the leasee, right? I'm the leasee. The leaser, no, he's the leasee, I'm the leaser. I don't know, whatever. The guy that owns the lease, the guy that owns the building, that a lot of these commercial businesses, at the end of the year, will take a look at sort of this CAM charge sort of thing. I do not know what CAM stands for, but what I understand, it's just that the charge that covers, you know, the maintenance of to maintain the building that you're renting. And I guess the problem is that the people that I had it that had the building for 14 years, we never had any issues, right? Never had a challenge. And when these new people came in, the first thing they did was said, we went back and looked and you weren't paying enough CAM charges. And I was like, that's the weirdest thing I've ever heard. Turns out that's actually a thing. I didn't realize it. My buddy was telling me that, you know, at the end of the year, they'll go back and reassess how much it costs to run the building. And I guess in the lease you have signed, or I had signed, that if it's determined that more money was spent than was collected, that they have the ability to ask for more money. And... jeez. So, I don't know. I guess I really have nothing to be mad about. Got to Give, new Pearl Jam. I am such a freaking fan of this album. I am such a fan of this album. It's crazy. I am, let me turn this down a little bit. Let me turn that down a smidgen. There, is that better? Yeah, it's a little better. I am such a fan of this album. It's so good. Oh my God. And it's, you know, I don't want to say it's nothing like any other Pearl Jam, but that's sort of the point. You know, it's, I guess as a person who loved, I guess this would be my 3-minute Pearl Jam rant, right? But as a kid, when I grew up with Pearl Jam, you know, I loved the album 10, right? And in my mind, every album should be just like 10, but that just doesn't work. And Pearl Jam has done a nice job over the 33 years, right, that they've been together, of being able to keep producing interesting albums. Sometimes they're not as great, right? Or just, you know, maybe it has a few great songs, always a few bangers, but never a complete disappointment. But then, you know, and other times just really great albums. And this album is really fantastic. So, I don't know what that means. So it's just really such a great album. And then, man, we live in such a good time. I've been watching so many Pearl Jam concerts in Las Vegas and the Forum and all over the place. It's and just great, you know, right up close, better than any show. It's sort of, you know, I was hoping to maybe go see him this year. I don't think we're going to. Tickets are so much. And, yeah, I don't know. Just blessed that we get to watch it on YouTube. But just love that album. Love that song. Love the words in that song. Really cool. But, yeah, so a couple things. I was, I went to a meeting, I guess. I have, you know, all right, one thing at a time. I went to the meeting on Friday. And it was really good. A young lady spoke. I think she had like 13 years. Great message. You know, but she mentioned, you know, she talked about this, you know. People always say this, I still got a lot of work to do. And I'm always like, I wonder what that means. I wonder where the work needs to be done, right? What work needs to be done? And, you know, I have always said I'm like one shortcoming away from a complete fuck up, right? You know, I'm one character defect away from complete tragedy. And, you know, and what I shared with in the meeting was that, you know, it's these little, you know, the topic of character defects and shortcomings came up when my buddy Bobby spoke the other day, and he said that he felt that they were the same. I wish I could get your opinion on that, but I don't have a way to get it. So sorry. But I don't think that that is true, right? I've said this before. I think character defects are flat out just bad shit that you have in your picture when you're down on the boardwalk, right? That caricature that guy draws of you, whether it's a cigarette, you know, smoking, drinking, lying, cheating, stealing, womanizing, sex, whatever it is, those character defects that really separate us from the rest of the crowd. And then there's shortcomings. And I've had the, you know, I asked a guy that sponsored me, my buddy Andy, at one point. I said, what do you think? Did shortcomings, or what are they? And because I explained, I feel like they're at the end, right? And it wasn't actually Andy. It was another guy who spoke for me. He said that he felt like shortcomings were at the beginning of a character defect, right? So, you know, I use stealing Wawa sugar packets, that example, a lot. You know, if I'm stealing Wawa sugar packets early, maybe that leads, maybe these are the gateway, right? The gateway drugs. Stealing Wawa sugar packets is the gateway drug to eventually stealing cars. You know, he felt that shortcomings were early on in a character defect, where I sort of felt like they were maybe the last hanger-ons, right? And maybe it's a little of both, right? Maybe it's a little of both. I know that, you know, I think about this a lot, you know, back in the day of my using and the lifestyle that I lived and the world that I lived in and the people that I hung out with and the groups that we associated with and the activities that we took part in. And what a freaking world, man. And I can't imagine living in that world and then trying to go to like a meeting, right? I remember when I, you know, my first go around with sobriety, I remember just being just amazed at how quickly, you know, I had gone from this one sort of lifestyle and then gotten sober and then sort of like the third step, went through that door. You know, I'm so grateful that I, you know, had gone to the hospital and I found that group and I was able to hook up with those fellas and we were able to start this new world. But when I picked up a drink in Easton, It wasn't, but it didn't take a week till all of a sudden I was associating with different kinds of people, right? Maybe a little longer because I was living a lie, right? I was definitely living a lie. But my thinking, my behavior, the comments I would make, they all completely changed early. And then my wife and I were living over in Easton. I came up with the great idea that we would move back here to the beach and start a landscaping business. And when we did that, my drinking was off to the races. And immediately I was doing shady shit, meeting shady people, had a lot of shady behavior, right back into that world, right? And it didn't take very long, right? I went right back through the door. And you know, I'm so grateful that I don't live like that today, but that is the tough part, I think, about getting sober is just, you know, trying to get out of that world. You know, they say you need to change people, places, and things. You know, if we find sobriety and it becomes a big part of our life, people, places, and things will leave us, right? They're like, hey, no, we are not hanging out with this guy. You know, this is this guy. I remember in the past hanging out with people when I was sober that drank a lot. Me hanging out just made them, have to take a harder look at themselves. And I remember back in my days of drinking, that was the least thing that I wanted to do. I definitely did not want to look at myself. And so you can't really have a foot in one world and a foot in the other. You sort of have to dive into one or the other, or you're going to struggle. And so, yeah, the shortcomings to me are the challenge. You know, on the outside, we can look perfectly sober. Hey, you, like I said, man, as soon as you stop drinking, people are immediately patting you on the back. You're doing so good, right? You're doing so good. And yes, we are. We're not drinking, but those character defects and those shortcomings are still under the surface. And the character defects usually are a lot of my character defects sort of went away when I left that scene, right? Just the behavior and sort of the scandalous stuff. You know, of course I lied, but you know, I don't, that's something you have to address, you know, lying, cheating, stealing, right? It doesn't always look like the form that I thought it would look like. You know, I remember when someone told me, you know, I steal peace of mind. I was really blown away by that. So that, you know, it comes in all shapes and sizes, but those obvious things, hopefully we try to change right away, but it's those last little things, right? And I found just in my path and the place where I'm at today is those are the little things that keep us sick or keep me sick. And I shared the other night, I said, you know, it's my first thought. I've shared that many times in this program or on this podcast. My first thought really bugs me. You know, I wish it wasn't so dark. I wish it wasn't so opposite of the guy that I want to be on the surface or publicly. You know, when someone pulls out in front of me or someone's not doing what I want, I immediately want to fucking destroy them, right? I don't have this, I wish my first thought was, oh, guy cut me off, that's adorable, right? It just doesn't exist. It's, you know, privately with no one looking, I can be a real fucking asshole inside, and I hate that. I try to do better. I do, in fact, I am better. I'm getting better, I think, because I've talked about it. I want to be better at it, and I've been working on it. But it's just, you know, but those little things, those little shortcomings, right, can still keep us sick. You know, behavior on the internet. That's another one. That one's crazy. But listen, that's between you and your sponsor. But it's just, yeah, it's just been, you know, the other thing that I did this week was I went, so another cool thing that's going on is I've talked about going to that Saturday night meeting that I used to do. And I'm deciding I'm not going to go to it because of the traffic. And I have found another meeting. I found another meeting last night. I knew of the meeting, but I just couldn't seem to get to it. It was always like about 5:45. I'm like, what other meetings are there? And then it'd be like, there's a 6 meeting at Epworth. I'd be like, damn it, I missed it. And so yesterday I looked around 5 o'clock on the meeting app and it said 6 o'clock. I was like, shit. And I made it 2 minutes late, but man, what a great meeting. It was on, it's a big book meeting. I'm not currently attending a big book meeting, so I'm absolutely going to be going to this meeting. It's totally doable. It's on Saturday. It's at 6. You know, there's a little bit of traffic, but I can absolutely get there. And it was an awesome meeting. And it was on the, it was from the Big Book. You know, I do a lot of 12 and 12 and step study stuff, but actual readings from the Big Book I do not do. And this was a great reading talking about, you know, what to do when you're trying to help an alcoholic. And it's always interesting to read these stories because they took place so long ago. I don't know if it was in the 40s or the 50s, but, you know, the reality is alcohol was a real big issue back then. Not that it isn't an issue today, but back then, you know, if you were an alcoholic, it was jail, institution, or death. That was it. Those are your solutions. There was no AA. But there was like the Washingtonians. There was a few programs, these groups desperately trying to get something together to try to help these alcoholics. It's almost like, you know, I don't know what to compare it to, but it's a big issue and a bunch of people trying to figure out how to solve it. And so there was a few attempts, but in the end, you know, we ended up with AA. But it talks about, you know, what to do when you're trying to help another alcoholic and the links and steps that you have to go through and go to. And, you know, I remember, you know, the battle that I had with getting sober was with pot. And it wasn't even that it was that big of a deal. My parents just hated it and I just loved it, right? And so that would be, it's like telling somebody you can't eat cake, right? I love this cake. And I couldn't figure out, other than them telling me that I shouldn't be smoking, I didn't see the harm, right? I didn't see the harm in smoking the pot. I look back and does it sort of sap your motivation? Yes. Is it good for a kid to be smoking pot? No. If you're going to smoke pot, at least wait till 21, like, you know, drinking. But it was a thing. And my parents, you know, I went to rehab because of pot, right? I didn't even... It's so funny the way we thought back then, but pot was the big one, right? And I would try to, you know, I'm white knuckling it. Don't smoke any pot. Don't smoke any pot. And then someone would come around with pot and I'd be like, let's smoke it. I couldn't shake that monkey. And, you know, eventually going to rehab, which is ridiculous. I shouldn't have said that. It seems ridiculous that I went to rehab for smoking pot, but whatever. But, you know, but when I finally, you know, that would be just sort of the beginning, though, right? And then getting introduced to drinking alcohol and then drugs and then meth and then all these other things that, you know, I went down the rabbit hole with. And then finally, at the very end, all I was left with was me and vodka. And at that time, there wasn't a lot of people left in my life. You know, I had my parents and, you know, anybody that would sort of attempt to drink like me. But for the most part, it was just me, myself, and I in this lonely existence. And every night, you know, talking about, how I'm going to quit and flirting with the AA hotline. But really nobody around there telling me, you need to get sober, right? My mom would say, Tom, don't drink vodka, right? Tom, if you're going to come over, don't drink vodka tonight. I'd be like, okay. But it was never like, you should quit drinking. You're an alcoholic. It was like, just don't drink vodka. And I was like, yeah, okay. But, you know, suffering big time. And when I finally got sober, right, you know, I got in that fight and I got the shit knocked out of me. And I just, everything sort of lined up for that time, right? I wouldn't stay sober, but I was ready, right? I didn't have to have a bunch of people pleading, Tom, please get sober. I just decided to do it on my own. And that's really, I think, where I think most people has the most success is when they're left alone. Nobody's left, right? And they have to come to we admitted, right? It is the path, I think, that there is more success than complete deflation. But, you know, that talks about, you know, you may burn down a mattress, right? You don't want to let us give an alcoholic money. This whole rules. And I was like, this is one vial of holy water away from a fucking exorcism. Because it is that. And especially back then, you know, we've raised the bar due to AA and people working hard and getting sober and helping other alcoholics. We've raised the bar. We don't have to go down that far. But back in those days, man, jail, institution, or death. And if it was your family, they would have preferred you to be in a jail or institution because they knew if you weren't, death was following near. However that sounds. Near, soon to follow. I don't know, whatever. Death. But it was fucking grim, man, bleak. And today we don't have to do that. And, you know, I said last night, I don't I remember that when I first got sober, we used to pass around, my home group used to pass around a beeper for the month. And so I used to carry this beeper. This is back in the beeper days, right? And, you know, we didn't have cell phones. We just had regular phones, but these are the beepers. And the beeper would go off and there'd be a phone number and then you would call it. And on the other line, there would be, you know, somebody that was sad, struggling, drunk, belligerent, whatever it would be. And, you know, my job was to have a conversation with them and try to help them. And so we used to do that. We used to go to take meetings into jails. I've never really, I mean, I guess I've been on a 12-step call maybe once, but not many, not many. I said last night, I'm not spiritually fit for it. I'm just not quite there because I still believe that if you have to want this. And but I also live in a time where it's not as desperate, right? We, you know, most people I see coming to the program, I always think, you know, it can't get worse. I know for me, when I came in this program, I still had a job, I still had a car, and I still had a place to live. I still had parents that talked to me. I dated some. I had some friends, right? I still was allowed in town. So it could get a lot worse. Luckily for me, as of today, it hasn't had to. And I am grateful for that, but, you know, I'm still in this place. I've seen so many people coming in and out, you know, that haven't hit bottom, right? That have, yes, they're inconvenienced, and yes, do we want to help a person as soon as we can, right? We don't want someone to have to go all the way down, but some people have to, right? And so I've tried to, you know, I do what I can. I'm always available. Like I said in the meeting last night, I go to four meetings a week. I shake hands. I introduce myself. I put my phone number on pieces of paper. I try to go to the same meetings every week. I try to be a good example. I try to share, right? And I try to, you know, be of service in those ways. But I am not pulling people off bar stools. And I'm not letting people in my house. And I'm not setting mattresses on fire. Right? And, you know, there's a guy I work with now. And I don't have a lot of interest in working with him because he doesn't have a lot of interest in getting sober, or he doesn't have a lot of interest. He has a lot of interest in doing what he likes to do, right? I go to this meeting and I'm like, you know, you should come meet me at the meeting. Oh, I don't like the way that meeting smells. I'm like, smells? Yeah, it smells funny. I'm like, okay. Sounds good, man. Talk to you later. I don't have any patience for that, right? How freaking quickly we forget, right? If you ever hear me say I won't go to a meeting because it stinks, and listen, there's this meeting. It's kind of back in the woods. It's sort of humid. You know, it doesn't smell great, but God damn it, it's better than fucking drinking, right? And there's a lot of people that, and especially that dry dock is, you know, a lot of people that if you're struggling with alcohol and you're asking around about getting sober, more than likely someone's going to say you should go check out dry dock. And so dry dock is can be the gateway to finding sobriety, right? A lot of meetings. I think they have a couple meetings there a day, every day, all week. And, you know, it's that place that if you're having trouble, go over to dry dock. And, you know, and I think last year they said a snake died in the roof. I don't know. But there was a weird smell. But fuck, you know, can you imagine what it was like back in the day, you know, when, you know, they're fucking dragging alcoholics off bar stools and setting mattresses on fire and you know, begging for money and, you know, whatever it is that these guys were doing to try to help these people who were destined to fucking die, right? They're destined. That's your destiny. If you're back in those days, if you were a drunk, you know, the whole town knew it. All of the principles that are in place today, I think, are about spirituality and understanding what life was like back in those days, right? Because back in those days, a person that was an alcoholic, he was the town drunk. He was a bum. Everybody knew it. You know, it was horrible, right? And if you could fucking shake that somehow through this program, you know, you wanted to be anonymous. You didn't even want to be known as the guy that used to drink. That's how bad it used to be. And today, you know, like I told that guy the other day, you got your teeth, you got your hair, you got nice clothes. You can go, you don't have to be here, right? It can be a lot worse. And the funny thing is I haven't really seen that guy anymore. So I guess he didn't have to be there, right? But you know, I am grateful. And the other thing I said, I'm just grateful for the men and women who put down, you know, that foundation for the people that would follow, like me, and the people that will follow after me, that struggle and that have raised the bar, right? Have put things in place. I mean, even the when I came into the program in 1997, you know, we used to have a few meetings, but I remember going to my first meeting up in Dover. It was a 45-minute drive. But, man, the guys would be in the car. We'd have the meeting before the meeting after the meeting. It was really awesome. And so in this time of more convenience and more meetings, I think we have lost some of the things that we used to have, these men, these groups of men meeting to go to meetings. Now it's just like a meeting here. I can go to a meeting here, like the meeting I found last night. So, but even in the time I've been sober, it's become easier to be sober, right? If you want it, there are more meetings. We've lost some. But, you know, just grateful for the people that came before me. Like my grandmother, Grandma Peaches, man. She was a fucking a pioneer in recovery back in the 70s and 80s, right? And the people before her. And so, you know, I don't want to feel like I can't do my part, but there's a lot of things that I can do that we can do that is helpful, right? Like I've said, I always try to go to the same meetings and be consistent. If somebody wants to talk to me, more than likely I'll be there every week. They can know this. And people do come up and talk to me all the time. And, yeah. So just a great week, another great day of being grateful that I am sober. Super excited about this big book meeting. I do like the big book. Same group of people, right? I saw all my friends doing the same thing, right? They were actually going to, my friend, a couple of my friends I saw, they were going to go to the 7:30 meeting, which I stopped going to because of the traffic. And they're like, yeah, we're going to that meeting too. And I was like, yeah. And I sort of was a little jealous. I felt like, man, that would be kind of cool to go to that meeting as well. But I'm just grateful I found this one. All right, let me read the daily reflections. I don't even know what my time is here. I think I've gone long, of course. Yeah, almost. Daily reflections. I'm off paddling today. It's a beautiful, beautiful freaking day here on the East Coast. Sunday morning, just love it. The Upward Path, June 2nd. Here are the steps we took. Alcoholics Anonymous, page 59. These are the words that lead into the 12 steps. In the direct simplicity, they sweep aside all physiological and philosophical consideration about the rightness of the steps. They describe what I did. I took the steps and sobriety was the result. These words do not imply that I should walk the trodden path of those who went before, but rather there is a way for me to become sober, and that is a way I shall have to find. It is a new path, one that leads to infinite light at the top of the mountain. The steps advise me about the footholds that are safe and about the chasms to avoid. They provide me with the tools I need during the many parts of solitary journey of my soul. When I speak of this journey, I share my experience, strength, and hope with others. That's right. Yeah, that's great reading. I'm going to go paddle. I'm going to go suffer for a little bit and enjoy the day. I am super grateful to be sober. I appreciate for letting me share. And yeah, have a great day. Bye.